very attractive feature. The man had responded even better than he anticipated, and the whole thing could not help bring a great benefit to them. He took up the routine of his work with a glow of satisfaction. After all, he wanted to do as Jesus would, he said to himself. It was nearly 4 o'clock when he opened one of the company's long envelopes, which he supposed contained orders for the purchasing of stores. He ran over the first page of typewritten matter in his usual quick, businesslike manner. Before he saw, what he was reading was not intended for his office, but for the superintendent of the freight department. He turned over a page mechanically, not meaning to read what was not addressed to him, but before he knew it, he was in possession of evidence which conclusively proved that the company was engaged in a systematic violation of the interstate commerce laws of the United States. It was as distinct and unequivocal a breaking of law as if a private citizen should enter a house and rob the inmates. The discrimination shown in rebates was in total contempt of all the statutes. Under the laws of the state, it was also a distinct violation of certain provisions recently passed by the legislature to prevent railroad trusts. There was no question that he had in his hands evidence sufficient to convict the company of willful, intelligent violation of the law of the commission and the law of the state also. He dropped the papers on his desk as if they were poison, and instantly the question flashed across his mind, what would Jesus do? He tried to shut the question out. He tried to reason with himself by saying it was none of his business. He had known in a more or less definite way, as did nearly all the officers of the company, that this had been going on right along on nearly all the roads. He was not in a position, owing to his place in the shops, to prove anything direct, and he had regarded it as a matter which did not concern him at all. The papers now before him revealed the entire affair. They had, through some carelessness, been addressed to him. What business of his was it? If he saw a man entering his neighbor's house to steal, would it not be his duty to inform the officers of the law? Was a railroad company such a different thing? Was it under a different rule of conduct so that it could rob the public and defy law and be undisturbed because it was such a great organization? What would Jesus do? Then there was his family. Of course, if he took any steps to inform the commission, it would mean the loss of his position. His wife and daughter had always enjoyed luxury and a good place in society. If he came out against this lawlessness as a witness, it would drag him into courts. His motives would be misunderstood, and the whole thing would end in his disgrace and loss of his position. Surely it was none of his business. He could easily get the papers back to the freight department and no one be the wiser. Let the iniquity go on. Let the law be defied. What was it to him? He would work out his plans for bettering the condition just before him. What more could a man do in this railroad business when there was so much going on anyway that made it impossible to live by the Christian standard? But what would Jesus do if he knew the facts? That was the question that confronted Alexander Powers as the day wore into evening. The lights in the office had been turned on. The whir of the great engine and the clash of the planners in the big shop continued until 6 o'clock. Then the whistle blew. The engine slowed up. The men dropped their tools and ran for the blockhouse. Powers heard the familiar click-click of the clocks as the men filed past the window of the blockhouse just outside. He said to his clerks, "I'm not going just yet. I have something extra tonight." He waited until he heard the last man deposit his block. The man behind the block case went out. The engineer and his assistants had worked for half an hour, but they went out by another door. Chapter 6. If any man cometh unto me and hateth not his own father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, in his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. When Rachel Winslow and Virginia Page separated after the meeting at the First Church on Sunday, they agreed to continue their conversation the next day. Virginia asked Rachel to come and lunch with her at noon, and Rachel accordingly rang the bell at the Page mansion about 11:30. Virginia herself met her, and the two were soon talking earnestly. "The fact is," Rachel was saying after they had been talking a few moments, "I cannot reconcile it with my judgment of what Christ would do. I cannot tell another person what to do, but I feel that I ought not to accept this offer." "What will you do then?" asked Virginia with great interest. "I don't know yet, but I have decided to refuse this offer." Rachel picked up a letter that had been lying in her lap and ran over its contents again. It was a letter from the manager of a comic opera offering her a place with a large traveling company of the season. The salary was a very large figure, and the prospect held out by the manager was flattering. He had heard Rachel sing that Sunday morning when the stranger had interrupted the service. He had been much impressed. There was money in that voice, and it ought to be used in comic opera, so said the letter, and the manager wanted a reply as soon as possible. "There is no virtue in saying no to this offer when I have the other one," Rachel went on thoughtfully. "That's harder to decide. But I've about made up my mind. To tell the truth, Virginia, I'm completely convinced in the first case that Jesus would never use any talent like a good voice just to make money. But now, take this concert offer. Here is a reputable company to travel with an impersonator and a violinist and a male quartet, all people of good reputation. I'm asked to go as one of the company and sing leading soprano. The salary, I mentioned it, didn't I, is guaranteed to be $200 a month for the season. But I don't feel satisfied that Jesus would go. What do you think?" "You mustn't ask me to decide for you," replied Virginia with a sad smile. "I believe Mr. Maxwell was right when he said we must each one of us decide according to the judgment we feel for ourselves to be Christ-like. I am having a harder time than you are, dear, to decide what he would do." "Are you?" Rachel asked. She rose and walked over to the window and looked out. Virginia came and stood by her. The street was crowded with life, and the two young women looked at it silently for a moment. Suddenly, Virginia broke out as Rachel had never heard her before. "Rachel, what does all this contrast in conditions mean to you as you ask this question of what Jesus would do? It maddens me to think that the society in which I have been brought up, the same to which we are both said to belong, is satisfied year after year to go on dressing and eating and having a good time, giving and receiving entertainments, spending its money on houses and luxuries, and occasionally, to ease its conscience, donating, without any personal sacrifice, a little money to charity. I have been educated, as you have, in one of the most expensive schools in America, launched into society as an heiress, supposed to be in a very enviable position. I'm perfectly well. I can travel or stay at home. I can do as I please. I can gratify almost any want or desire. And yet, when I honestly try to imagine Jesus living the life I have lived and am expected to live, and doing for the rest of my life what thousands of other rich people do, I am under condemnation for being one of the most wicked, selfish, useless creatures in all the world. I have not looked out of this window for weeks without a feeling of horror toward myself as I see the humanity that passes by this house." Virginia turned away and walked up and down the room. Rachel watched her and could not repress the rising tide of her own growing definition of discipleship. Of what Christian use was her own talent of song? Was the best she could do to sell her talent for so much a month, go on a concert company's tour, dress beautifully, enjoy the excitement of public applause, and gain a reputation as a great singer? Was that what Jesus would do? She was not morbid. She was in sound health, was conscious of her great powers as a singer, and knew that if she went out into public life, she could make a great deal of money and become well known. It is doubtful if she overestimated her ability to accomplish all that she thought herself capable of. And Virginia, what she had just said smote Rachel with great force because of the similar position in which the two friends found themselves. Lunch was announced, and they went out and were joined by Virginia's grandmother, Madam Page, a handsome, stately woman of 65, and Virginia's brother, Roland, a young man who spent most of his time at one of the clubs and had no ambition for anything but a growing admiration for Rachel Winslow. And whenever she dined or lunched at the Pages, if he knew of it, he always planned to be at home. These three made up the Page family. Virginia's father had been a banker and grain speculator. Her mother had died 10 years before, her father within the past year. The grandmother, a southern woman in birth and training, had all the traditions and feelings that accompany the possession of wealth and social standing that have never been disturbed. She was a shrewd, careful businesswoman of more than average ability. The family property and wealth were invested in large measure under her personal care. Virginia's portion was, without any restriction, her own. She had been trained by her father to understand the ways of the business world, and even the grandmother had been compelled to acknowledge the girl's capacity for taking care of her own money. Perhaps two persons could not be found anywhere less capable of understanding a girl like Virginia than Madam Page and Rollin. Rachel, who had known the family since she was a girl playmate of Virginia's, could not help thinking of what confronted Virginia in her own home when she once decided on the course which she honestly believed Jesus would take. Today at lunch, as she recalled Virginia's outbreak in the front room, she tried to picture the scene that would at some time occur between Madam Page and her granddaughter. "I understand that you are going on the stage, Miss Winslow. We shall all be delighted, I'm sure," said Rollin during the conversation, which had not been very animated. Rachel colored and felt annoyed. "Who told you?" she asked, while Virginia, who had been very silent and reserved, suddenly roused herself and appeared ready to join in the talk. "Oh, we hear a thing or two on the street. Besides, everyone saw Crandall, the manager at the church, 2 weeks ago. He doesn't go to church to hear the preaching. In fact, I know other people who don't either, not when there's something better to hear." Rachel did not color this time, but she answered quietly, "You're mistaken. I'm not going on the stage." "It's a great pity. You'd make a hit. Everybody's talking about your singing." This time Rachel flushed with genuine anger. Before she could say anything, Virginia broke in. "Whom do you mean by everybody?" "Whom? I mean all the people who hear Miss Winslow on Sundays. What other time do they hear her? It's a great pity, I say, that the general public outside of Raymond cannot hear her voice." "Let us talk about something else," said Rachel a little sharply. Madam Page glanced at her and spoke with a gentle courtesy. "My dear, Rollin could never pay an indirect compliment. He is like his father in that. But we are all curious to know something of your plans. We claim the right from old acquaintance, you know, and Virginia has already told us of your concert company offer." "I supposed, of course, that was public property," said Virginia, smiling across the table. "I was in the news office day before yesterday." "Yes, yes," replied Rachel hastily. "I understand that, Madam Page. Well, Virginia and I have been talking about it. I have decided not to accept, and that is as far as I have gone at present." Rachel was conscious of the fact that the conversation had up to this point been narrowing her hesitation concerning the concert company's offer down to a decision that would absolutely satisfy her own judgment of Jesus' probable action. It had been the last thing in the world, however, that she had desired, to have her decision made in any way so public as this. Somehow, what Rollin Page had said and his manner in saying it had hastened her decision in the matter. "Would you mind telling us, Rachel, your reasons for refusing the offer? It looks like a great opportunity for a young girl like you. Don't you think the general public ought to hear you?" "I feel like Rollin about that. A voice like yours belongs to a larger audience than Raymond and the First Church." Rachel Winslow was naturally a girl of great reserve. She shrank from making her plans or her thoughts public. But with all her repression, there was possible in her an occasional sudden breaking out that was simply an impulsive, thoroughly frank, truthful expression of her most inner personal feeling. She spoke now in reply to Madam Page in one of those rare moments of unreserve that added to the attractiveness of her whole character. "I have no other reason than a conviction that Jesus Christ would do the same thing," she said, looking into Madam Page's eyes with a clear, earnest gaze. Madam Page turned red and Rollin stared. Before her grandmother could say anything, Virginia spoke. Her rising color showed how she was stirred. Virginia's pale, clear complexion was that of health, but it was generally in marked contrast with Rachel's tropical type of beauty. "Grandmother, you know we promised to make that the standard of our conduct for a year." Mr. Maxwell's proposition was plain to all who heard it. "We have not been able to arrive at our decisions very rapidly. The difficulty in knowing what Jesus would do has perplexed Rachel and me a good deal." Madam Page looked sharply at Virginia before she said anything. "Of course I understand Mr. Maxwell's statement. It is perfectly impracticable to put it into practice. I felt confident at the time that those who promised would find it out after a trial and abandon it as visionary and absurd. I have nothing to say about Miss Winslow's affairs, but," she paused and continued with a sharpness that was new to Rachel, "I hope you have no foolish notions in this matter, Virginia."
"I have a great many notions," replied Virginia quietly. "Whether they are foolish or not depends upon my right understanding of what he would do. As soon as I find out, I shall do it."
"Excuse me, ladies," said Rollin, rising from the table. "The conversation is getting beyond my depth. I shall retire to the library for a cigar." He went out of the dining room, and there was silence for a moment. Madam Page waited until the servant had brought in something and then asked her to go out. She was angry, and her anger was formidable, although checked by some measure of the presence of Rachel. "I am older by several years than you young ladies," she said, and her traditional type of bearing seemed to Rachel to rise up like a great frozen wall between her and every conception of Jesus as a sacrifice. "What you have promised, in the spirit of false emotion, I presume, is impossible of performance."
"Do you mean, Grandmother, that we cannot possibly act as our Lord would? Or do you mean that, if we try to, we shall offend the customs and prejudices of society?" asked Virginia.
"It is not required. It is not necessary. Besides, how can you act with any..." Madam Page paused, broke off her sentence, and then turned to Rachel. "What will your mother say to your decision? My dear, is it not foolish? What do you expect to do with your voice anyway?"
"I don't know what Mother will say yet," Rachel answered with a great shrinking from trying to give her mother's probable answer. If there was a woman in all Raymond with great ambitions for her daughter's success as a singer, Mrs. Winslow was that woman.
"Oh, you will see it in a different light after wiser thought of it, my dear," continued Madam Page, rising from the table. "You will live to regret it if you do not accept the concert company's offer, or something like it."
Chapter 7 Rachel was glad to escape and be by herself. A plan was slowly forming in her mind, and she wanted to be alone and think it out carefully. But before she had walked 2 blocks, she was annoyed to find Rollin Page walking beside her.
"Sorry to disturb your thoughts, Miss Winslow, but I happen to be going your way, and I had an idea you might not object. In fact, I've been walking here for a whole block, and you haven't objected."
"I did not see you," said Rachel briefly.
"I wouldn't mind that if you only thought of me once in a while," said Rollin suddenly. He took one last nervous puff on his cigar, tossed it into the street, and walked along with a pale look on his face. Rachel was surprised, but not startled. She had known Rollin as a boy, and there had been a time when they had used each other's first name familiarly. Lately, however, something in Rachel's manner had put an end to that. She was used to his direct attempts at compliments and was sometimes amused by them. Today, she honestly wished him anywhere else.
"Do you ever think of me, Miss Winslow?" asked Rollin after a pause.
"Oh, yes, quite often," said Rachel with a smile.
"Are you thinking of me now?"
"Yes, that is, yes, I am."
"What?
Do you want me to be absolutely truthful?"
"Of course."
"Then I was thinking that I wished you were not here." Rollin bit his lip and looked gloomy.
"Now look here, Rachel. Oh, I know, that's for